Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 310 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. If I'm not mistaken, well over 24 days of content. You could almost listen to Dudes and Beer for a month solid, if that's your jam. I hope it is. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you from Austin, Texas, as always. Well, at least always in 2020, that beautiful Rona time of year. Special shout out to St. Arnold's, my hometown Houston brewer. I am loving their Texas winter IPA, little hint of grapefruit in there. Not a sponsor, actually. I just love St. Arnold's. Don't forget to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast website, everybody. Dudesandbeer.com is where you can go to get all of your latest stuff. That is where you can also go to download the very awesome and back at you Dudes and Beer app. The app is back, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, we are working on the Xcode file for all you Orchard dwellers out there, but all you Android users, all you got to do is go to dudesandbeer.com/app. That will take you there. Click the groovy picture. And when you click it, you'll see this little download window come up on your mobile device. Click save. Then all you do is go to your downloads, click the APK, and it'll install. If you already have it installed and we've updated, follow the same process and just say allow. And you'll be all set. You get everything live in your pocket. You get all the alerts from guests, upcoming shows. There's a tip calculator there if you're out and about in the world. All kinds of great stuff. Dudesandbeer.com/app is the place to go for all of that goodness, folks. Our guest this evening, which I cannot wait for, Stephen Bishop, I know you were out there, my friend, my former co-host, my good buddy, compadre. This episode is for you, my man. How many times did we sit back and talk about deep underground military bases in the studio? How many times did we have that conversation? That's what we're having tonight with author Mary Joyce, the author of Deep Underground Military Bases in North Carolina. I cannot wait for that. One more shout out before we go to our commercial. Our good friend Wavy Dave, old bandmate of mine, sent me some great books for the studio. A whole lot of Joseph Campbell books, as well as my man Nikola Tesla. I am about halfway through this right now, and it is great. Tons of stuff there. Big thanks to you, Wavy Dave. I love the fact that you listen to the show. I love the fact that you are still out there drumming and doing your thing. When we come back from this message from our sponsor, Podcast Cadet, we will be talking to our guest, Mary Joyce, about deep underground military bases, black budget projects, all kinds of fun things right after this. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Full disclosure, folks, Chris Jordan here. I am one of the co-owners of Podcast Cadet. We started that program because we just found a bunch of people that got really bad advice, either starting podcasts for themselves, didn't know how to start them for their friends, businesses, what have you. So stop on by. PodcastCadet.com is the website. Our guest, Mary Joyce, tonight. I am so excited about this episode to talk about deep underground military bases in America, to sit down and discuss some of the black budget programs that are involved with these things, as well as what's in these. Mary, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's always nice to have a nice conversation.
Absolutely. So sorry about the technical hiccups today. And of course, thank you so much for being able to pre-record. I never really know what my schedule is whenever I am on show, so I greatly appreciate the courtesy.
Well, since you're in Texas, we're just really happy you have electricity.
Oh, that's right. Like I told you before the show, I was one of the very fortunate few who still had power, still had water. We had no internet. We had intermittent cell service. So it was like we went to 1990, not 1890. We were extraordinarily lucky through all of it. Before we get into deep underground military bases, things like that, let's get a little bit. I always like to talk about people's bona fides, what they do, how they got into the realm of research that they're in. And you yourself worked in newspapers, you worked in publishing for years, as well as working on the team of the Bernstein Bears, correct?
Well, that's really going to impress your audience. Yeah, I worked on talking children's books when I worked for Texas Instruments.
Awesome.
And one of the books we did was by the couple that did those books.
And, you know, that I've got to do a whole episode sometime on the Mandela effect, because, of course, the Bernstein Bears is one of those where people are like, I swear it was Bernstein my whole life. So interesting stuff, to say the least. But you have been involved with journalism, editing, and research of material for years. And what was it that first led you down the rabbit hole of deep underground military bases? Because that is a rabbit hole.
It is a rabbit hole, and it's not one I went looking for. There was a man who came into where I worked, and I had known him for several years, and he lived in the Cherokee area where one of the facilities was being built at that time, and he started telling me about it. And he is one of these people who also has a military background. He was in it, I think, for maybe 10 years. And so he was a really good witness. I already knew him, so I trusted him. He had some of this information from the military that would make him, you know, a good witness to all of this. And he is one of the first ones that really got me interested in it. The place where I worked, which I don't really want to advertise at this point, but it was a place where I got to meet quite a lot of people, and I got to get into conversations with many of them. And so a lot of the information stemmed from connections I personally had made. And these people just wanted to open up with me because they knew about my website.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible to know that people started coming to you with their testimony on these things. And you mentioned your website. Would that be skyshipsovercashes.com?
Yes, and it confuses people. We started it because there's also a lot of UFO activity in this area.
Yeah.
And that was the name that we started with, but the website has really grown since then. And if I'd seen far enough into the future, it probably would have gotten a different name, because we get into so many other things besides UFOs. We do Bigfoot and Cherokee Little People, and of course the underground bases, and just a whole lot of other stuff.
And that's what I love about people like you, is that you may have started at one place, but you realize that there is so much more to the story of all of it than just UFOs, than just one topic. And the fact that you have gone into Cherokee Little People, gone into folklore in America like that, the fact that you've gone into almost the realm of what would be modern folklore, especially once you start talking about stories like Dulce Base, things like that in New Mexico, with deep underground military bases.
Well, one of the reasons I did the book is because anybody who's interested in this particular topic is going to know about many of the things that go on in the western part of the United States. People simply didn't know that there was so much activity here in the mountains of North Carolina. And I ended up writing about five of them that are here in western North Carolina.
Wow. Well, let's go ahead and, I guess, start cracking this nut a little bit about what is going on in the foothills of North Carolina out there.
Well, they're all military related. They're underground facilities. The one that I thought your audience might be the most interested in is the one that has been built under the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And the reason I thought that would be a good one to really focus on is because there are so many people who've been to that park.
Yeah.
And there are, and if they haven't been to the park, they certainly know where it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, the National Park Service is, well, it's the National Park Service. It's one of the most largely traveled vacation things in our country, you know? People are in and out of them regularly. And to know that not only something like this is going on, deep underground military bases, but that there are tons of people that go missing every year, all kinds of stuff. So there's a whole other story behind our National Park Service. There are quite a few of them. We have a couple here in Austin that are part of, quote, Agenda 21, you know, things like that.
I got you. But anyhow, this first witness regarding this particular facility, he and his wife, who also has had a military background, they were on the south side of Cherokee, and Cherokee is immediately adjacent to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And they saw this very unusual truck with a something on the back of it, which I wouldn't have identified, but he was able to because of his military background. And he said it was a decontamination chamber or module. And he went up and he's a really friendly, outgoing guy. And he went up and talked to the driver of the truck, and it was a woman. And she said she was waiting there for other vehicles, and they were going to go in a convoy to an undisclosed location. Well, eventually these other ones did show up. They were escorted by men with guns in SUVs. And he and his wife decided to follow this little convoy at a distance. And if people are familiar with the park, from the North Carolina side, they went past the visitor center to a place called Smokemont Campground. And the whole convoy turned in there. As soon as they turned in there, the gate was locked, and they couldn't follow them any further, and neither could anybody else. The more we learned when we found out where this location is, that is like the closest point to the actual entrance to the facility, which you cannot get to from any kind of a road. And military craft were being used during this whole building time. And our witness was able to get photos of big cargo planes flying out of the park, and the tailgate would still be open because it hadn't even had time to close up as it was taking off. He got photographs of Osprey planes, which are like workhorses, and he saw them with big, I would guess, containers that would be like a railroad car that would be dropped off by these Osprey. And so there was all sorts of evidence of construction going on. So that's how it really began to make itself known. But you can't see it. You cannot see the entrance. It's only accessible indirectly. It's beneath a ridge. And if people find it on the map, it's called Hind Tugi Ridge. I assume that's an old Indian name. It's just a gravel road. If anybody wants to find the location, you can type in Mile High Campground. It's just beyond the campground. And that road is above where this facility would be. It's just really, really well hidden. But we kept getting information in so many different ways. For example, there were two men at the fishery, and the fishery is in Cherokee. Again, it's adjacent to the park. And they noticed that the water flowing from the river down into the hatchery was really getting very slow flow. Excuse me. And so they followed the creek up to its origin, thinking there maybe was a beaver dam or something that was clogging it up. When they got to the very top of it, the old reservoir that was up there was normally full of water. It was totally dry. And where this reservoir had been, there was a 50,000-gallon tank buried into that place. The top part of it was still showing. Pipes were going from that down into the ground. So this underground facility had tapped that as a water source. Wow. You know, these men saw it. They lost their jobs quite after that because I guess they didn't want anybody talking about that. People have also seen park rangers, and I should put that in quotations because they've been seen carrying machine guns, which is nothing that a park ranger should have. So there's a lot of peculiar things that were going on. They even turned that area of the park into a no-fly zone. And the reason they gave was that the noise of the planes would disturb the elk. And a number of years ago, they relocated elk into the park to regenerate it. If the elk used to live here and they, you know, were killed off. But this is so bogus because there is a road that goes through the park. It's the main road from North Carolina to Tennessee. And at the visitor center, there are always elk there, and sometimes in significant numbers. The traffic's going by there all the time. The tourists stop and take pictures. So the elk are not scared away by the noise. And so it was just a bogus excuse for stopping the people from flying over.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially whenever you're talking about declaring something a no-fly zone, that's definitely, what are you doing there that doesn't need flying? Like you're saying, elk in a national park, they're pretty used to a little bit of noise, you know? There's people driving by, taking pictures, there's roads that go through the national park, all kinds of things.
And this is off the main road, so it's constant traffic. So the idea that it would scare the elk is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and especially whenever you're talking about things like Osprey and C-130s, stuff like that, that's really much more a logical reason for a no-fly zone.
Gotcha.
Like, if you've got military aircraft taking off and everything else, normally you want that flight pattern for only the military aircraft.
So that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And even to see the picture, like you said, of the C-130 that your eyewitness sent you, where it's flying with the gate open. Like, and unless you're actively dropping payload, be that personnel with parachutes or equipment with parachutes, or ordnance with parachutes, you don't really fly with the tail bay open. That's not really what you typically do.
And that plane was flying really low, so it was coming out of the park.
Well, yeah, I mean, even to capture it with the detail that they captured it, it would have to be pretty low unless they had an extreme sports lens and, you know, very steady hands.
Well, I think it's a pretty good picture considering they weren't expecting it.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not your average Bigfoot photo, you know, where it's like, wow, that's really blurry.
Right.
They had an opportunity to get a really good, clear look at this thing.
Right. And there's also pictures
for a hot second.
Two pictures of Osprey at two different locations.
Yeah.
One from directly from Hein Tooge Road, which is the road that would be, in, from what we can gather, directly above where the entrance to this place has to be. Mm. None of us have been able to see what the actual entrance looks like.
Wow. Wow.
They also closed that Hein Tooge Road. They also closed that off for about a year. They said, you know, something about the weather had washed it out. Now, mind you, this is the same time when the reservoir had gone dry. So that was bogus, too. And they did eventually, like, regrade the road. But it wasn't because it was damaged from any kind of weather phenomena. It was because at some point they were using heavy trucks to take stuff in there.
Hmm. And now, once you started finding out about this, Mary, how long before you just became immersed in this topic? Because you at least from what I've read of the first book, it really goes into some great detail about this stuff. How long before you really started fully immersing yourself in this singular topic?
At this point, I wouldn't have done a book just on one facility. It's when I began to realize I was getting information about multiple facilities. That's when I began to, conceive of the idea of putting it together as a book. But I didn't start out to do that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it was just, like you said, just people coming to you with stories that you'd heard about, or that they were telling you, rather.
Actually, this is not the first one that I learned about. I wanted to talk and make sure that we covered this topic because of its location. But the very first one I learned about is now called the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. It has before that been a part of the Department of Defense. Back in the Cold War days, it was a monitoring station for satellites and just part of the Defense Department. The facility is beneath that. It's like six stories deep. It's city size. It's totally self-sufficient. That's probably the oldest one of the ones that I know about. There's a lot that's been going on there, too. Sometimes you can go into that place when they have it open to the public. You can go right in. It's supposedly an educational astronomical facility now. But you can't always. And there have been times people have seen a guard at the gate dressed in SWAT outfits.
Wow.
So that's not normal. And
yeah.
It just isn't. There's been UFOs that have been seen flying around that particular facility. You can't rule out the possibility of a connection with some of the UFOs in the military.
Sure.
You quite often see the two together. But that was started by a couple that used to come into where I worked. They knew I did the website, and they were kind of shy. They would come in and start talking to me about UFOs that they'd seen from here and there, blah, blah, blah. And eventually, they wanted me to come to their camper trailer in the park, National Park, They wanted to talk to me about supposedly UFOs. Well, when I got there, that isn't what they wanted to talk to me about. The woman had been raised as a child in a, I'm going to say, like a military fortress. Her father was involved with high security work that nobody could talk about. The whole little community was really intimidated into not ever talking about what went on there. And she wanted to let me know that there, she had concern about this facility at the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, that they had the ability to wipe out memory there. They had the ability to do different things, and she was very concerned. Well, all I could do was to listen and kind of take in her story. I would not have run a story just on what she said. Another, again, I was in a nice location where I met these wonderful people. Another man, he came and he was involved, and may still be, with training people for high security type positions. And he will go to Washington, D.C. To train people. So he's in some of this stuff pretty deep. And he wanted me to know that what the woman had said was true. And he wrote me a letter. He deliberately changed the way his writing style was so that he couldn't be identified that way. He had somebody else deliver the letter to me. And after he provided all this information, I never saw the man again. And up to that, before that, I had. So he wanted to make sure he was not connected with me. But he confirmed the first lady's story. So I just kept digging into information after that.
And that is amazing. I'm gonna read here for our listeners who can't see the video feed. This is directly off the Perry.edu website. This is the Perry Institute website. Perry provides the tools and space for students and scientists to become inspired and pursue a future in the space and STEM sciences. We welcome all researchers to explore their new ideas by providing support and access to our NASA-grade facility, instruments, and data on-site and remotely. And like you said, if that facility existed before Perry existed...
That's correct.
And Perry took it over. I mean, there are very few people who would be building a NASA-grade facility.
I hear you.
That's not a far leap of logic for me. And as you can see, I got a little bit of technology, you know. Even my home studio is pretty tech savvy. But to build a NASA grade facility is truly next level and takes a lot of money. And to know, like you said, that there were armed guards outside, things like that. Absolutely.
But not always. Sometimes you can just drive there and it's not a big deal. Well, but there are times when you cannot.
Absolutely, because I guarantee you that whether it's black budget contractors, what have you, they're busy using the facility to probably confirm data that they've gotten elsewhere, something like that, outside of a military system.
Gotcha.
Like that, that's what I would do. If I had access to a private lab, instead of taking the information that we found and putting it through a military system, let's confirm it over here first. And not to say, like I said, that isn't black budget military or military contractors, something along those lines, you know, because there are many of those out there, be it Bigelow Aerospace, all kinds of stuff. So...
Well, I don't want to make it sound like it's always easy to get the stories, because it's not. One man that I talked to, he told me that his son worked at that facility and tried my best to get an interview with the guy, but he absolutely would not talk.
Wow.
So the people that are still doing things, they just have to keep their mouths shut.
Yeah. And it's rough because sometimes you... take those jobs? Because, yeah, you truly do have the best of intentions. You truly do have the best concepts at heart. And it just ends up that things get kind of fakakta in the process, or the process that you became a part of, little did you know, was fakakta to begin with. So, and a prime example of that is our previous guest that we've had on this show, Dr. Robert Duncan, who was one of the people who helped the CIA create, like, mind control technology and algorithms and things like that that were predictive algorithms for people's behavior, all kinds of things. When he found out what his technology was being used for, he left. Upset.
Oh, that's pretty upset then.
And he turned whistleblower at that point.
Well, information also can come in some very unexpected ways. Another man contacted me, and I don't know if I can remember all the letters, but this man worked for the Department of Social Services in a town closest to this facility, which is Rosman, North Carolina. And I don't think he works there anymore, so I think I'm pretty safe in talking. But he said that there were cases of satanic ritual behavior being around this area where this facility is. I don't know how far I can go with that, for the simple reason that another man, when he was a young man, worked at a nearby Christmas tree farm. And the people that worked on this farm had seen animals being taken in crates into this facility.
Well,
what in the world were they doing with these animals?
Yeah. Yeah.
Begin to put all these pieces together, you go, oh my God, what is going on there? I've heard more of the bizarre kind of stories coming from the Pisgah facility than the other four facilities that I've learned about.
Well, and let's get into those other facilities real quick.
Okay. It's interesting. Most of them are near parks. For example, the two we talked about, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, the Pisgah Astronomical Institute is right off what they call the big bend of the Blue Ridge Parkway. And that right there, hold that map. You can see that kind of a crook where it says Blue Ridge Parkway. Well, this facility would be right about where the word ridge is on the map you're showing right now. And so that's right. That's in the park area. And it's like when you look out from there, it's like, you know, you don't see any civilization. Another one is Sugarloaf Mountain, which is right immediately adjacent to Chimney Rock Park. Now, that's a state park. Some of these others are national. And that's interesting, too. Somebody who, again, got to know me through the website contacted me for different reasons. And she eventually connected me with a friend of hers who lived at the very top of Sugarloaf Mountain. Sugarloaf Mountain, when you get up to the top, just has maybe 6 houses, just a few at the very top. And to get there, at the time I first went there, it was a gravel road that had many hairpin turns. And she talked about, again, these military craft dropping off equipment at the top of the mountain, just beyond where these houses are. And she and her husband, you know, hopped the fence and went up there and checked things out after some of this activity had gone on. And fresh sod had been placed all over it. So they had done something and tore it up enough that it had to be resodded. When I've got an aerial view of the top of that mountain, and it looks like an old silo for military rocket. I don't know if it was ever used for that, but it looks like many of them. And I've shown diagrams and other pictures so you can see, you know, it really does fit into the mold. So I don't know, maybe they just took an old silo facility and expanded on it. They saw car tracks or vehicle tracks that went right up to a cement wall up there at the top of the mountain, again, beyond where these people live. And the car tracks go right absolutely up to the wall. Well, you know that can't happen. That means that wall opened because, you know, the bumper or the roundness of the wheel would prevent you from having your treadmark, you know, just dead in right at the edge of the wall. So that's another story that has a whole lot of, you know, interesting tidbits to it. Later, and I personally have not followed this up, but I talked to three witnesses. Since I was there, they've had all sorts of big electrical trucks. I think maybe about as many as 20 at one time. They put in these giant electrical cables, I mean, really big cables. One of the witnesses said it was like installing electricity for a major stadium, supposedly just for, you know, a handful of houses at the top of the hill. Well, obviously, it was being used for something else. So that's another one that's kind of interesting.
Wow. And now, when you're talking about Sugarloaf Mountain, just curious, because, of course, I'm from Texas and I lived in Maine, and both of them have a Sugarloaf Mountain. Yeah, but there are a couple others in the country as well.
Florida even has a Sugarloaf Mountain. It's just a hill, but they do.
But you were specifically talking about Sugarloaf Mountain, North Carolina.
Adjacent to Chimney Rock Park in North Carolina.
Okay. Yeah, just making sure before we carried on there, before people started, my audience is Google prone during the show as I am. So just wanted to make sure for those who were searching things out there where they could narrow their search category a bit. Now, earlier you mentioned these testimonies from eyewitnesses about animals being carted into the facilities, things like that. And that was something that was mentioned in the testimony about Dulce Base, was that, of course, there were numerous levels to the base, and some of them were doing genetic experiments with animals. Some of them were doing chimeric experiments between extraterrestrial entities and animals, some of them between ETs and people. Did these people mention anything regarding the animals? Did they ever say that they saw anything going on afterward or any kind of aftermath?
Well, the observers from a Christmas tree farm aren't going to get in the facility. So just the fact that they saw crates with animals in them being taken into that facility, you know, is about as much as they could tell us.
Yeah.
And I've never been able to confirm that from an insider.
Yeah. And I mean, some of that stuff is tough to confirm on that end. But even still, the story of it is fascinating and really is one of those noodle scratchers that's like, why would that be happening? You could make the argument of like, well, you know, everybody needs to eat. Typically, they just cart in beef, man. They ain't carting in the animal, you know, right. They're just carting in the meat. So
another point I think I need to make before I forget it is that I'm pretty convinced that these facilities are connected by underground tunnels.
Mm.
And I know I sent you a picture. It's a, you know, a picture anybody can probably find on the internet of one of these giant underground boring machines. And they can do, depending on the type of material they're going through, they can go through, you know, as like 7 miles in a day, carving something big enough for some kind of a transportation system to be built. I've gotten the witnesses who have experienced underground vibrations and noise for a period of time beneath their homes in the mountains, and then it stops. And for example, I've talked to people who are, if you connect the Smoky Mountain National Park with the Pisgah and make a straight line along the ridge there, some of those people lived along that ridge, which made me think that indeed a tunnel might have been built between those two facilities. I also was able to talk with two people who had been in the Air Force, and they were doing their own research. I have not kept contact with them. I have no idea where they are now. But they were investigating this area for a while, and in their opinion, there is definitely an underground tunnel system, communication tunnel, between this area and going up to the D.C. area. Or, you know, along the Appalachian Ridge, I should say.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got an article up right now from WBTV Channel 3 there in North Carolina from Rowan County talking about residents curious about a strange noise heard in parts of the county for up to 5 minutes at a length. And these reports came out from across the country. And I was an avid coast-to-coast listener when Art Bell was a host. And it was regular that you would hear the reports of this.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, are they all hearing the same kind of sound?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
These people are describing grinding sounds and vibrations and mechanical sounds. I don't think that all those vibrations and sounds that people heard that were reported on coast to coast were the kind of sound.
Sure.
I think it was more of a high frequency sound, maybe.
Well, and granted, you know, even if one of those big groovy diggers started going through dirt or clay instead of rock, it would make a totally different sound.
That's true also. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get final answers on everything, but we're learning more and more. And I've made a real effort on our website to get people to become Google Earth researchers or searchers. And it's astounding what I've discovered just with Google Earth, you know, on Mars in Antarctica under the ocean. But I got a call from somebody who lives near the Pisgah facility that we were just talking about, and he let me know that there were new vibrational sounds and some kind of digging or something was going on at Pisgah.
Oh, wow.
And I started using Google to kind of go over it, and I found a large hole, mostly covered up by two tarps, but you could see down beneath it. There was big earth moving equipment there. Dirt was being taken out of the ground and being spread out over the hill. So obviously there was some more digging going on or expansion going on. And I was able to get confirmation of that with Google Earth.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, Google Earth has become such an incredible tool in so many different fields of paranormal study and research, whether it comes down to ley lines, alignments of monuments, even finding temples and civilizations that were never found before.
Right. It's really exciting. It's like you can be an archaeologist from your own office with a computer. And I did a whole series. I found four different ancient underground facilities, not the kind we're talking about, but ancient civilization evidence along the whole coast of California. Other than one of those, I'd never heard of any of the others before.
Yeah. And, you know, for my money, whenever you're talking about things like deep underground military bases, deep underground facilities to begin with, because like we said at the beginning of the show, they are not just here in America. You go to Japan and there are some there. There are even a couple here that study neutrinos, all kinds of stuff. And once again, much like the Perry facility, where it's like, hey, we got a NASA grade facility. They could be used for all kind of alternative research as well.
That's correct. That's correct. Anyhow, if I assume you have some people in your audience that are interested in this, and I just want to give the full title of the book. I don't know if you
Oh, absolutely.
It's Underground Military Bases in Big Letters, Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. If you go to the website, skyshipsovercachers.com, and open up the editor's corner, you can open up and there will be like a brief little information paragraph about each of the books that I've done, including that one. And all of my books are available through Amazon.
Yeah. And I've, like I said, I always buy the books of my author or of my guests, rather. We have added your books to the Dudes and Beer store as well. They're right here where you can go nice and easy. And I got Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. Absolutely amazing information.
And it's not just words.
No.
I get pictures of the places. I get as much location maps and photos as I can. And I do that on the website, too. We live in a world where people want to get information fast. We're very visual. And so anything I do has both elements to it.
Yeah. And it's so important. That, I mean, that's one of the reason why I ask people for photos, why I ask them for, you know, maps, anything like that. Like if you were out giving a presentation or a talk, what would you put in your PowerPoint? You know, because, yeah, while we are on the radio, while we are on audio platforms, we're on video platforms as well. And that's why I started the Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault on our website, was because I could now show people the PDFs of the declassified government programs. Gotcha. It's like you think I might be crazy, or you think my guest might be crazy talking about this. Well, here's the actual patent.
Right.
You know, and when you start seeing documents, when you start seeing this kind of declassified material, when you start seeing black budgets right in front of your face, it's a little bit different story, you know,
That's where my newspaper background has been absolutely good preparation for what I do with the website. I take, you've got to find the proof. You've got to, you can't just go off speculating with nothing to back it up.
That's it.
I don't want to do that.
No, you can't. I mean, you can, and it makes for great entertainment. But it is not factual. It leads down horrible places. It can lead people to a place of utter fear in life. Basically you are feeding into that, and that's no good, you know?
And it's especially important now because we have gotten so deep into a swamp of conspiracy theories.
Yes.
There are conspiracy theories in every direction. And people don't take the time to check it out to see if what they're passing along to others is correct or not. And so people say, well, I saw it there and I saw it there, therefore it must be true. And I go out of my way to make sure that there's information to back up what we're putting on our website and what I put in my books.
Yeah, it is so entirely important. I mean, and my audience knows, they know where I used to work. Told you where I used to work. The whole reason I started this show was because I saw these stories. I saw these things, and it was like, why are we not actively talking about that? Why is it that when CERN creates matter out of light, it's a sideline news article written up in two sources? Like, CERN just made matter out of light, man. I think that might be slightly more important than what politically is on the horizon.
Right. We are drowning in politics, and I hope that we can get our heads above it.
Well, yeah. And, I started this show because I love conspiracy theory. Don't get me wrong. But, man, it can lead to some horrible places. But there is a lot of fact behind a lot of those theories. And that's why on this show, like I said, my audience knows whenever I am putting out my hearsay and conjecture, I say full on, this is my hypothesis. I don't even use the term theory anymore because conspiracy theory was rated by the FBI as a watchword. So we use the term conspiracy hypothesis here because we should all be following the scientific method when we think. And it's hypothesis and then theory to prove the hypothesis. So you're allowed to hypothesize any crazy thing in the world as long as you say it's a hypothesis. And that's even science. As long as you say it's hypothesis and not a theory, you're right. It's a hypothesis. So, yeah, we get very exacting with that because the CT has become a very dirty word in our day and age. Despite the fact that there are tons of people sitting in prison for conspiracy, and I'm pretty sure just about every DA in the country is technically a conspiracy theorist. Like, that's what they do for a living, is come up with a narrative and then sell it to a jury. So, no different. And yeah, it's hard sometimes to get past that. Like, we didn't even do a show about conspiracy theory on this show until I could get a hold of Dr. Richard B. Spence, who taught a course on conspiracy theory. Like, I don't want to talk to hearsay and conjecture. Let's talk about the facts behind it. You know, let's look at pictures of airplanes, things like that, taking off at very low altitudes with bay doors open. Let's take a look at project site maps, things like that, that really do kind of start putting the puzzle pieces together for you once you start seeing them.
Well, it sounds like you'd make a good newspaper reporter.
I can't write.
Oh, okay.
I know. ask my wife. You get me beyond the one page that I write for my podcast posts, and that's something special. I cannot write. I can extemporaneously speak all day long, but I cannot write to save my life.
Well, okay.
Before we let you go, I want to thank you again for taking this time early to be with us, and for your patience this evening. But before we go, tell everybody where they can go, of course, besides the Dudes and Beer store, to get your books. Tell them where they can go to follow you. Tell them where they can go to subscribe to channels. Give everybody the whole spiel. It is shameless self-promotion time.
The website that I edit and do most of the research on is called skyshipsovercashers.com, and you just put it on the screen. That's good. If you just can type in Skyships Over, it'll probably pop up. Cashiers is the name of a town here in North Carolina, but it's spelled like a cashier at the grocery store. Under Editor's Corner, which is on the homepage, when you open that, you can click on something about information about my books. So when you click on that, you get a little description of each of the four books that I have currently in print. They're all available through Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. And once again, fantastic material, very well researched, very well written, and just presented in such a fantastic way. Not like a heavy, thick research kind of way.
Oh, so. I can't stand reading things that are nothing but gray matter or just, you know, solid gray type.
Yeah.
And written in an academic format. I just want to cringe. And I don't think anybody else really enjoys reading things like that either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a technician for a living. I live for an instruction manual. Like, give me an instruction manual. I will read it all day long.
But you have reason to want to read it.
But when it comes to material like this, you could get Joseph Campbell with it, folks, and get deep and crazy philosophical. But it really is coming at it from the point of view and the language of the common man, and being able to show the trail, being able to really put the puzzle pieces together without it being complicated. And you do a great and fantastic job with that, Mary.
I appreciate your kind words. Thank you.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line while we close things out here real quick. While you are online checking out everything over at skyshipsovercashers.com, make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast website, folks. Dudesandbeer.com is the website. That is where you can go to get the remade app. That's where you can go to download all the episodes. That's where you can go and even call us. You can even call and leave questions for our guests right there, 512-677-4155. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.